You are unique, active, determined, resilient. You are not your diagnosis, and you are not alone. This is Young Onset Parkinson's Network. We believe young onset Parkinson's disease does not define you. You define it. We are a safe place to learn, connect, and engage within a supportive community that actually gets it, because we've got it too. Welcome to Young Onset Parkinson's Network. Living well starts here.
Today we have a special guest who has worked and interviewed on this show. A note to our listeners, this interview happens just after the death of his wife, Amy Mogan. Gavin Mogan is an activist who is passionate about keeping it real and showing what's happening to his body and what he's experiencing and noticing about the lack of kindness and compassion in the world. He's calling for action by showing that compassion, by personifying that empathy he speaks of, rather than preaching it. His call out is to say, what can we do better individually and as a community? How can we be more vulnerable, knowing that vulnerability is our greatest asset? And like a boss, Gavin shows up grounded and with a great intention and presence, which is why it's such a pleasure to welcome him every time. Gavin Mogan.
May I ask you, Gavin, before we start the, you know, this whole chat, how you doing with grief?
I think I'm okay. It's weird. I think Parkinson's, 15 years of Parkinson's, really prepares you for death, I suppose, because it hadn't hit me real deeply, and I don't know if it will, because I don't know. I've grown to see life as very precious and day by day, and I had time to prepare for this before Amy passed away. She was sick almost a year, so we saw it coming and prepared. We lived every day and like just squeezed everything we could out of every day and every moment. And so there's very few regrets. I'm going to say there's no regrets, but there's few regrets. Amy lived really well. I lived really well with her, enjoyed her presence. And of course I miss her, but like I saw this coming. And with Parkinson's, you kind of lead a lonely existence anyway, I think. I mean, you kind of can't help that because people don't understand what you're going through. And so you sort of distance yourself to some degree. And so it's really hard to get really emotionally involved in something because I see everything as transient and temporary and able to let go of things. And I really don't feel like Amy has gone away. I feel like her presence is still around. She's still keeping up with the family. She's helping us and pushing us. And like I still feel that love is there, even though physically she's not. And I'm fortunate because I feel that way. The kids don't. And I have to remember that this is so much harder on the kids. And because my focus is like my kids are 18 and 14, is so much how can I help them adapt? What do I need to give them? What do they need? How can I sort of replace Amy in some way that they need? And so my mind is always there, and I haven't allowed myself the opportunity to just say, man, it's a different outcome, Amy, but it is. I'll tell you a funny story real quick. So, you know, this Movers and Shakers podcast, can I mention another podcast on this? Is it the Movers and Shakers podcast? I saw they did an episode recently on, it's called Parkinson's on Your Own. And I saw that and I glanced at it. And I thought, well, I don't need to listen to that. I dismissed it. I said, that's not for me. And then it hit me. It's like suddenly like, wait a minute. I am kind of on my, I've got the kids, but like, I'm going to be on my own. And it really struck me as like Parkinson's on my own. Yeah, that's the new me. I'm going to have to get used to that. But I hadn't, until that time, I hadn't even thought of myself as without a care partner anymore. I thought that was strange. And so I listened to the episode and got a little bit out of it. And Heather, you know what it's like. I've always thought how difficult that is. And now here I am in that situation. And I'll figure out my own way with it. Life is hard. Like, there's just almost no way around it. Whether you have Parkinson's or not, life is hard. It's difficult. Just to get used to that, just to embrace that, and just, you know, Phil Stutz, the therapist, says in this movie Stutz on Netflix, says there's three things that everyone has in life, no matter what. They're always going to be there, and that's pain, constant work. What is the third thing? There's pain, constant work, and certainty. So, yeah, and that's true. There's so much to that. If you just accept that those things will always be there, and now what can you build around those things? And so, for me, doing things that are hard and difficult, taking on challenges, becomes normal. You do something that's hard, and the next time you try to do it, it becomes just normal. And I don't do these things willingly. I'm usually forced into them. So as life becomes harder, just try to do that hard thing. Look for that hard thing. You know, that the arrow points here is like, do this, focus on this. This is where the icing is on the cake. Go here. And we resist that. And because we want obviously an easy, comfortable life. We got enough problems. But if you sometimes chase that hard thing and then the fearful thing, that's where the growth is. And that's where you generate some excitement and confidence to believe you can do these things. And so how do you tell a person to go after what's hard? I don't know. Maybe they just have to get to a point where that's their only other, they get back into the corner. That's the only way out of it.
So Gavin, how has faith helped you get through this?
Man, good question. I was just telling somebody that this morning, like, you know, it's a thing some people don't want to talk about, but for me, because I get it, I like, you don't want to be preached to, and everyone's got their own spiritual beliefs, but like for me, this belief that there's something larger than myself that kind of oversees what's happening and loves us, and is there's generally good in life, having that philosophy takes all the pressure away, because I know that whatever comes is, I can handle it, because there's someone there, some entity, the universe is greater than me, and it's all going to work out in the end. Like, life has always worked out in the end up until now, and it always will. And it's not usually not the way we want it to. That's the thing is, but think of all the things that could or can or do go wrong in the world, and by the same token, that those are things that went right for someone else. So it's very circular, and it's all part of one entity, one plan, one life, one organism. Maybe it's for a reason, and like they didn't go my way the way I wanted them today, but they went that way for a certain reason, and whatever that reason was, I can make something out of it. Like, it's my job to take what I'm given and do something with it. Not for things to work out the way I want them to. And coming to that realization was big, because I don't sit around and wait or sit around and sulk when things don't happen the way I want them to. I mean, I do some, but for you just what's given to me today? You know, it's like Rick Rubin, the great record producer, describes as like it's a conveyor belt of things come along the conveyor belt. What gifts are on that belt? What can I pick today? I'll pick this and pick this and pick this, and what can I do with that? So even in amidst the worst possible thing, which cancer, your spouse getting cancer, your child getting cancer, but your spouse getting cancer and passing away, amidst that, there were so many good things surrounding it, like with people and how much they helped us and how much community support we had, and love, and like how much we appreciated what we did have. It's like, man, even the one bad thing, but 99 good things in the whole sphere, same sphere. And like, you have to sort of get out of your own head sometimes and step back and look at the big picture. And if you look at the big picture, man, what a world, huh? What a world. Unbelievable.
That reminds me of been a lot of conversations over the years now. I remember when you spoke about Amy just before she passed, you said she had a great day and you were so impressed with that. Everything she's going through, you were just so impressed with that. It kind of brings you to an understanding of who you are, that kind of attitude.
Yeah, Amy and I, you know, she did her best to understand Parkinson's, but she didn't understand Parkinson's. Who does? And I didn't really put that on her to make her understand it, because she's happy with the life she had. And so, you know, didn't mean she didn't love me, and then I didn't love her. It just means we're sort of separate in that thing. I took it Parkinson's all into myself as much as I could, which was not ideal. It hurt the family and it hurt our relationship, but it was the best thing. We had to do it to make it work at the time. And then that last year when she got cancer herself, immediately we connected, and she understood Parkinson's instantly, but to much greater depth. And I understood her situation, not completely because hers was terminal, but I understood much what she was going through. And that last year, it's weird how life works out, because to become closer to someone and more understanding in the most stressful, vulnerable times, like, maybe that's natural, but like, it doesn't stand to reason that way, but we did. And like, we really enjoyed each other for that time in a weird way. Like, just, we got each other's humor, gallows humor, and, you know, just loved each other's company because of that understanding. We also knew there's limitation on likely how much longer we had with each other. And that is very, very, it's sad to say, it's weird to say, but it's a very precious time for me, and I think for her too. And that, like, I saw her come to new levels of understanding and faith and love and humor. And she was, I'll remember that as fondly as I remember the time when she was healthy. And man, she was a dynamo when she was healthy, but she was a dynamo when she was not healthy too. And that's the lesson for the kids, I hope, is look, no matter what life deals you, you still care about other people and still give your all to everything and still believe in yourself and believe in life, believe in love. And she certainly did that all the way to the very end. And man, what a great example. From death to, she overcame a lot. Life wasn't easy for her, and she sometimes she was overly positive, more so than I thought was justified. But man, the world sure needs that stuff. World needs people like with good energy and good presence, and people who care about them and give them attention and let them know they're seen and heard and felt. And no question, Amy did that, and to her own detriment. Sometimes it's hard to be the person that that solves people's problems and that wants everyone to be happy in a room. Puts a lot of pressure on yourself, and she felt that. But like, when you see the impact it had on the community, man, so worth it. Like, I'm so glad my kids got to see that example and at least got to enjoy it for the last year of like watching her with, you know, you think of people dying suddenly, how awful is that? But at least we had that last year to like, it's painful to watch, but time, you had to admire the way Amy handled it. Sorry for going on.
You know, you sound very bodhisattva right now. You sound very Buddhist, and also a mixture of the traditional, like the Christian and the Buddhist philosophies here. It's almost like you're transcending the material world a little bit. You talk so much about things being temporary in the material world, and I really can resonate with that, but it's so hard to put into practice. You have embodied this. What, like, there's a big difference between me talking about it and then me embodying it. You are the personification of such. You're not even preaching or processing. You're just showing by example. What's better than that? Your kids have an example of the embodiment of being here now, staying present.
Yeah, thank you. I was not an easy student, but people stayed with pushed me and taught me, and like you finally listen to these things. They finally sink in. You give it enough chance. You hear it enough, and I had people around me that showed me, and just said explore this and experience this and understand this and think about this, and enough, you know. Finally, I'm hard-headed, I'm stubborn, and finally it made more sense to consider and think that way, and life made more sense, and I was happier. And so why wouldn't I choose to have that kind of approach? And you know, you got to think this, the world wasn't created for us to be so uptight and stressed and so quickly lashing out at each other. And you'd think it was, I think the world, you know, some people say there's heaven on earth. If you find heaven here on earth, then I almost think that's some truth to that. There's hell on earth, you know. Some people with Parkinson's experience hell on earth. Well, by the same token, can we not experience heaven on earth? And I feel like I've had taste of it. No, I don't want more. Just like with the thing with Parkinson's, if I can get rid of Parkinson's for a little while, I had a taste of it and I want more. And now, can I do it more often? Can I extend the time I can do that and stretch it out and eventually kind of link these things together and make something permanent out of it? One of my best friends and mentors says, yeah, it's okay, you're visiting there, but you want to live there. What can you do to live in this place that you want to live in and be this person you want to be instead of just visiting that place? There's a lot to that. I've had great people, like unbelievable people around me to, and just like Amy was one, I've been so fortunate. And that how can I not want to give back when people give poured so much into me?
I'm not talking because I'm sitting here crying because my husband, we just went through this with my husband, but he's okay. But what was interesting was when we got to the point, it's not funny, but there was a little funny story. He says to me, you're giving me anxiety. He was going through chemo and radiation. And I said, you're giving me anxiety. And then I looked at him and I said, nobody said that a person with Parkinson's should be caregiving for a person with cancer, but you do it. You do what you have to do. And you do understand each other a little better because he's seeing mortality. I'm not seeing mortality, but I'm watching him, and you do learn a lot. So my question to you is, you're so positive and you have such a positive attitude. And we talked earlier about doing the things we love and getting out there and enjoying ourselves the best we can. And again, what do we do when we need to dig ourselves out? Do we just go back to that place or? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. First of all, it's just so bizarre, isn't it? When you mix these households, cancer and Parkinson's, and watch them interact, it's almost like between Amy and I, we made one decent person out of two of us. And so what she lacked, I sort of brought to the table and vice versa. And so it was sweet. It was pathetic and funny in a way, but also so sweet to be in that kind of a situation where you need each other and love each other and would do anything to provide for one another. And she'd give anything for me and me to her. And so I was very fortunate. But I know I have a practice. I there's things I do that center me, that I know what I need to do. And if I don't do them or get them, I'm not the same person. But, you know, it's forms of exercise. It's approaches to exercise. It's doing it. Certain people, being out and about with people, doing certain things, certain tasks, mind-body tasks that keep my mind in a good place. And so spirituality. You know, certain routines and certain non-routines. I know what makes me feel good, and I chase those things. I'm fortunate enough to be able to do that. And I wouldn't be good under certain conditions, but if I can dictate most of the conditions in my life, a lot of the conditions, I'm fine. The trick is to dictate as few of the conditions as possible for yourself, and like to be able to accept whatever comes. And that's also, you know, if you can get there, highly recommend it. just be comfortable with anything and believe you can handle anything, and not to the way that you certainly think it should go or will go. Like, you get comfortable failing and losing, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because don't set these expectations of what you think is going to happen. Just be comfortable with what you can do, when you can do it. And expectations are a tough one, because we all have them, but when things don't live up to your expectations, that's where the pain sets in. And so through sports has trained me a lot about failure and not living up to expectations, and just being my best and giving my most, and then being happy with that. And like, I don't have to be anything great or doing great athletic skills. I just want to be better today than I was yesterday. And I can do that. And I have the tools. I find ways to do that. And like that excites me. Just, you know, how can I improve myself? How can I grow this thing that Parkinson's in my brain, that Parkinson's is trying to degenerate? How can I regenerate? I know there's ways. I enjoy finding them. And it's part of what makes this, this discovery is fun. Exploration is fun. Beating something that they say is unbeatable, I'm not beating it. But when I define beat differently than most people do. You know, I know it's going to get me in the end, but like, if I can beat it today, outsmart it today, or outwork it or whatever, that's today. And I do it again, try to do it again tomorrow, I'm happy.
That's the lesson, is keep going.
I've said so many things. I'm sorry to, like, I don't know how you parse that down to one thing, but maybe there's something in there for anybody. Sorry.
I think what you said about, it's not about staying positive. It's just about, it is, but it's about keeping going with the road you're on. And I just have one more question about that. What about, I'm still in my, like, I'm getting into my, like, angry phase, you know, like I'm 6.5 years in. And people see me, and I ride horses, and I play pickleball, and I do all these things. But what happens when they're like, you look so great. And you're doing all of these things. I don't know what to say to people. I want to just be like, just be rude, but exactly. But I don't know what to say to people, if anything.
Yeah, I never felt the need to, like, that always just made me feel good. And I didn't want to tell them all I had to do. I don't want to unload this burden on anyone else. Let them think what they want to think. If that makes them happy, that's great. Like, of course, there's a ton of work behind it, but I also had this quiet confidence in that, like, it made me feel good, because I knew all that mattered was I knew what I had to do to get to where I was. And it was really hard, and you go through a lot, but I didn't need them to know. Like, when I was happy, just knowing myself, that inner pride, the inner confidence, that's all I needed.
Did you have that before? Was that your personality before all of this?
Some degree. Like, I grew up small. I was a little guy, and so I always had this chip on my shoulder, and to compete against bigger guys, I was constantly doing it. And grew up in my neighborhood with older kids, and run around with older kids, bigger kids, and like, I sort of developed it to survive, I guess. And when other things too, is get myself into places probably I didn't belong, but figuring out a way to compete, to stay afloat. Like, I've always got, I guess I've enjoyed that. And so that continues on to today, is like, being underestimated and figuring out a way to, I mean, I love that. So I read all the books by Malcolm Gladwell and Michael Lewis and all those things. I love the stories of people, like, how'd they do this thing? Like, they weren't supposed to be able to do this, but they came up with a way to do it. That's crazy. And like, I take a lot of pride in, like, that's how I'd like to be. And that's how I see myself. I'll tell you a quick story. So I love my little league baseball coach. He's still my life today. He means so much to me. And I'll never forget that I wasn't much of a ball player. I was average. When I was 12, I didn't make the All-Star team. And I didn't think I deserved to, but it was close. But every coach's son made the All-Star team, every single one. And I looked at that and I said, wow, I was 12 and I knew, like, wow, what a lesson on life, right? Like, this is how life goes. And, like, my coach sat me down of all the things we talk about, and this one's going to make me cry. And he told me, you know, it's not fair. You deserved it. And I stuck up for you. And I'm so sorry that you didn't make the team. And that was enough for me. Like, he knew I deserved it. I felt like I kind of deserved it. I did deserve it, given the fact that every coach's kid made it. But my dad wasn't. He was never out to baseball games. He didn't care about baseball. That's fine. But he wasn't there to promote me on the team. But what a lesson in life, right? Like, I didn't get what I wanted, but I was still appreciated and valued by my coach. And he built that self-esteem up in myself. And that meant a lot to me. And I think it says a lot about my approach to things and how I've looked at life ever since. Is like, man, life is not fair. But if I know I've given my best, that's enough for me. And if I know I've worked for justice and fairness, I have to let go of everything else after that, because life is never going to be fair, never going to be the justice we want. But all that matters is like, what have I done about it? And I can let the rest go. And I found I can really live with myself that way. And I have to, because we'll never get the results we want in the world, but you can get the results you want from you. If you know, and more today than yesterday, more tomorrow than today. I believe that. And so maybe all that kind of rolls into positivity. And I think of it, maybe it sounds positive, but I think of it as more of like a quiet confidence that you're gonna be able to handle whatever comes along. You won't like it, and that's okay. We handle difficult things, and like, you get through it and make the most of it, but like, you just move on to the next thing, keep going. How do you keep going? Yeah. Again, that's the tricky part. I get long winded on that. I wish I had a simple answer. There is no simple answer. There is no simple answer. Like, you gotta figure these things out for yourself. I think you have to. I think most people tell you that, like, how did you figure it out? Well, I figured it out this way. It helps to have people tell you things, but like, you have to experience to get that feeling to have it stick. You know, thoughts don't stay, they're fleeting, but feelings, well, experiences, they stay, and they're the greatest thing that we can take to learn from is our body, and it's instead of our minds, strangely enough.
You have said many times and in many ways that you didn't seek to get people to understand you or Parkinson's. You wanted to pull the lens back and look at the bigger picture and understand them. That is the ultimate non-dualistic approach. And one that I feel that many diplomats, many governments would benefit from. Would you ever be a diplomat for the Parkinson's community? Could you be a translator for us, please?
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Like, I don't know what that entails. Like, those sometimes words or titles, like, they don't convey, like, I don't know what that
means. You're going to say that.
I'm evasive, but I'm just me. And
you're so not interested in, like, kudos or, like, a parade. Like, you're like, I just want to do the work.
Yeah, because if the parade, you just want the next parade. Yeah. And if you just work, you're happy doing the work. And, like, it's in the process, you know. I sit and watch these softball players start to filter in for their practice. And like, I love that. Like, I love that they're practicing to get better, and that's what they love, and they're happy doing it. And that's where it's at. And like, what happens. I can't control what happens, but I can control what I put into it. And I was going to talk about, so you talk about understanding. It was Omotola Thomas, but on that, where she said, she told me one time she wanted someone to understand her. She said, you don't understand me. And this person said back to her, you don't understand why I can't understand you. You need to understand that I can't understand you. She's like, oh yeah, I guess maybe that's it. Like, that's what I need to understand, is like, people can't possibly understand me or us, and like, accept that. And that's what I've understood. And then maybe they'll understand us a little better. And there's something else I wanted to say. I'm trying to remember. And to understand, like, why, think about, I need to understand, why do I need understanding? Like, what's behind that? and then start to question that. And it's natural. I think it's very human to want to be understood. And there are phases you go through, like with Parkinson's. Very clearly, you go through this phase and that phase and the hard phase. They're difficult, more difficult times, and you get used to it and you normalize it and you get through it, you accept it. And then eventually, I don't know, I found a peace, definitely found a peace with it. But I wasn't always, so it was hard. It's, you lose your job, you lose your respect, your authority in the family, you become distant from people, you get depressed, you have apathy, you just have lost your financial, like everything. And so, but you realize there's still so much good, even without all those things. There's so much good. They can't take, you know, Parkinson's will never get your heart, your soul, who you are, like your spirit, your energy. And I've just had a lot of luck with being able to help people. And, you know, even just mowing, a couple of years I spent mowing yards, how much I love that, because you can reach people. No matter what you're doing, you can reach people, connect with people. And I didn't know that. Like, the delta between what I did before in my life and then now is so big. I've learned so much. Like, that excites me that, how did I not know these things? I don't know, but I had my nose down here. And then like Parkinson's has taught me like so much more different aspects of life that I had no idea about. That's all I'd want to do now is something health related or coach related or, training related, that sort of thing. I don't care what it pays. That's what I want to do. Have no interest in the news, politics. Used to keep up that stuff, current issues, business. Not compartmentalize, but you have to reduce your interest. You know, our time becomes very valuable, and you have to. That's another key point. I'm rambling, but it's a key point to understand how you spend your time, and you have to get smarter and more efficient. And stay away from things that aren't going to be good for you and be more into things that are good for you. And this is something with the kids now that I'm the only caregiver with the kids, I realize I have to step it up even more because I have to, you know, when my daughter gets up to go to school, I want someone to be in their room with her so she sees someone, you know, someone, another adult, and I want to be on and I want to be able to converse with her. And I don't have the luxury anymore of, you know, relying on someone else to do that. That's me. I want the best, very best for my daughter and my son. And the very best is like, I'm not doing enough. And so I can give more. And like, that drives me, like, what else can I do for my kids? Because these things I never thought about before, but they're so important to in raising a child, what those children's needs are. You know, as a dad, they had a mom that was kind of the nurturing, heartfelt one, sentimental one that did these things. And I was just kind of more the enforcer and the guy they'd come to for if they're in trouble or, you know, the other things. But like now I got to be both. I got to understand their needs and be sort of a mom because I don't want them to go without. They'll go without. They miss their mom terribly, but I'll make up for it in every possible way I can. And that ultimately that's what drives me more than anything is like, I'll do anything to make their lives a little bit better when I'm gone, make their lives a little easier. And so they can do it for their kids and their kids, so on and so forth. And all of us do a lot outside the family. And that man, that's so honorable and noble. Hard thing to balance both the family and advocacy and doing things for so many people that need help. And we're no matter what, we're interested in Parkinson's or anything. It's really hard to balance those things. And right now, I realize I need to pull back and give more to my kids. And that's where my interest is. I'm very interested in that right now. And I just have to be. And maybe that's inheritance for them. It's like, what can I show them? It's not going to be money. So whatever thoughts or feelings or life lessons I can leave them with, that's where my value is.
Sorry. You know what, it takes a village. So yeah. I have a daughter. So if you ever need any daughter advice, just call me. She's 29. I know it all.
Constant daughter advice. I know nothing. So
I can give you a lot.
What advice would you give to people in the community who want to be helpful to others?
Go and meet them and see them and greet them and just put yourself out there. And don't be worried about, you know, if you're curious about somebody with a disability or curious about somebody, how they live, don't be afraid to bring that up and, like, ask them. I see you're walking strangely, or are you okay? You know, there's so many people won't, as we know, so many people, when we need help, they don't want to stop and they don't want to get involved. And, like, it's so cool when someone actually stops and says, hey, do you need some help? Is there anything I can do for you? And, like, take the risk of being intrusive, but, like, sometimes somebody's going to really need that help. It's a world of people who need help in some way or other.
And you put your money where your mouth is in every way. I came at you once hardcore. I was so hard on you. And you forgave me just like that upon my apology.
And like
you
that.
You never held me like accountable. You never came at me. You never hit me back. And I was so wrong. I had taken some text and I interpreted it wrong. Surprise! Text is a problem for me. You know, I have to I'm a slow learner. But you did not come after me. And the fact that you loved me when I was so unlovable and you kept being my friend was absolutely miraculous to me.
How many times does that happen?
Oh my gosh.
Heather, no. you're being too hard on yourself. But like, that I'm not even aware. At least you're aware of it. How many times have I said or done things that, like, should have lost people, but they stayed with me and are here today? And, like, so, like you've said before, you can't take this stuff. You can't take it personal. It's not personal. And it's just us doing the best we are, making the most of a tough situation. We're all doing the best we can. We all love each other. We all snap occasionally. And
you're like family.
Forgiveness is like another great word. And like, to be able to forgive others and forgive yourself, man, what a pass that is. Like, that's the pass. That's the magic right there, is to forgive wrongs being done to you and for other people to forgive you. Man, it's like, you know, it's just magical. It's like we live in a la la land. We can make things, or literally we can make wrongs against us go away like that. Or things we've done to other people can make them, you know, they can give us forgiveness and a pass on, a grace on indiscretions we've done to them in the past. And like, to have that forgotten and start clean, fresh. Like, man, yeah, I don't know how to describe it. But we can do it instantly. And like, it's our choice. It's hard as heck to forgive someone sometimes, but you won't regret it. You know, I appreciate you saying that, Heather.
I'm going to call you about forgiveness to talk about forgiveness.
Well, and it's another thing Parkinson's has taught me, is like, these things we can get our mind and hearts to do things that we didn't think they could do. And because the difficulty of Parkinson's is like, it's hard every day, many times a day, you're doing hard things. And so you start looking at other things and think, well, can I do that too? Yeah. Parkinson's taught me you can do hard things. You can put yourself in uncomfortable places for a certain period of time and come out of it okay, come out better for it. And I can remember specific times I said, I can't do this. I can't forgive someone. It's too much. I'm too upset right now. I enjoy this anger. Like, I'm getting something from being upset, but I could stop it right then and there. And it was hard. I just said, for the benefit of everyone, forgive right now. And like, she thought I'd done something wrong to her, as my sister. And maybe I didn't realize it. And I just thought she'd done wrong to me, said things she shouldn't have said. And it was ruinous. Amy, she was around Amy at the time, and Amy was battling cancer. It was ruinous to what it was doing in our house at that time. I had to forgive, like, for the benefit of everyone. And as far as that was, I said, start now, it's clean, it's over, it's done. And not only was that good for the relationship, good for the house, good for my sister, it was good to tell, to show me, like, wow, I can really do that. Like, who would have thought? That's one of those things too, maybe I should have learned earlier in life, but like to learn now is like, wow, I can make a simple choice to do a certain thing and change not only my life, but the lives of those around me just by this choice I make and how I view something. Like, it starts to make you ask questions like, what, you know, what else can I do that with? And like, there's no end. There, so there's your forgiveness homily.
I didn't bring up the reason I'm drawn to both because you both exude love of people. Both you guys show that by your actions. You've been through things I've never been through. Man, I can't imagine going through what you guys have been through.
Love is it, man. It all, dude, we can talk about all this all day and all night, but like it all comes down to love. If you have it, if you feel it, if you feel love and you give love, changes everything. Anything is possible, you know, and sounds cliche, but like there's a reason why so many songs are about love, and we're all driven by love, and like love makes it all possible. It really does.
Speaking of songs, what's your favorite song?
Well, I get like obsessed and listen to certain songs over and over. I have a song right now I listen to. It's by Mac Miller. Mac Miller was a white rapper who overdosed five years ago. And the reason it's a really cool song. It's called, it's a great title. Something about like life is, there's no lyrics. I like the instrumental version, so I get confused in the title, but, life is beautiful. Life is good. Something like that. But it's just a really hip tune, really like gets me moving. And the reason I love it so much is because my son made one of the first videos I ever made was my son made this video for me. I really liked the video. And he used his song in it as a backdrop. He was 12, and like that has such special memories for me now. And I use that song to move when I feel like I can't move. I play that song, and it's trained me like to go back in time, I guess. It's just a strong, vivid, good memory with me, in addition to being a song I really like that, like, so powerful. You know, music is so powerful in so many ways. And the more we can use that to our benefit, the better. So when we attach these good memories to songs or anything, we can sure use those to generate that feeling that we need and get out of our head with the thoughts, and music can inspire these feelings that can actually change our state and put us in a better place, as opposed to, I say, like, I can only get so far with will, because will can't change my physiology. I mean, very unlikely. It's much harder to will my way out of certain situation than, but if something from the outside can give me a feeling that changes, it will change my state, like convinces my brain I'm safe or I can do it or it's possible, you know, whatever, that will change things. So it takes will, but more than that, it takes something external for me, something external to change my state, to make me feel safe, to change my physiology. And that's kind of the formula for me, is what I know now is like, it's not mind over matter to some degree, but like you need that spark. Like fires just don't spontaneously occur usually, but some spark can make it happen. And that's what I like. That's what I seek. And that's what I want to be, is the spark for others. What's interesting, that's Amy was starting to experience these brain freezes when she would go to the doctor. I guess she had this little, what you call white coat syndrome, and they'd ask her what her name was. Like a lot of times, you know, after procedures or something, she came out, she knew what her name was. She knew how old she was. She knew where she was. But when they asked her, she froze and she couldn't give the right responses. And so they'd take that to mean there's something wrong with her. And I'd have to explain, no, it's just like, she's not in a relaxed setting, and she's flustered, and like she saw you coming, shot at her, she went to a freeze just by the fact you entered this room. She knows these things, but she's getting them wrong. And I had to distinguish that for them. So it's something everyone goes through. They asked her one time, This is so interesting. They asked her, okay, do you remember what your name is? She's blank. They said, what's your first name? Amy. What's your last name? Mogan. She got it. Like, just the distinguish, just a little way they asked that question, like, somehow impacted her brain. And, like, wow. Brains are weird, man, but they're fascinating.
I just want to say that you are awe-inspiring. Even with positive people sitting here on the phone, on this call, it's inspiring to hear. So I appreciate your candor, and I send you so much love and light since your wife Amy passed, and it's inspiring. You're inspiring. Thank you.
It's so nice of you to say that, and it's from an inspiring group of people, and I wish you the best with your situation too.
Thank you.
Life is good though. I want y'all to see that life is great. Your life is great too. Have a good time, man. Have some fun. Having fun is okay. Get some love in your life, whether that be another person or just loving yourself, man. Love is good. Spread love. I'm out of here. I'll be back soon.